welcome to another episode of the Send Mum Club podcast. I am Gemma, your host. Thank you so much for choosing to listen. Whether you're a first-time listener or you've been here since the beginning, which I know that loads of you have, thank you so much for all of your nice messages on Instagram. I've had lots more this week and I really, really appreciate them. If you aren't following the Insta, we are at the Send Mum Club. Well, I say we, that makes it seem like I've got like a whole team around me. I haven't. It's literally just me. Editing, recording, producing the lot, which sometimes is great because it means that I'm in full control of everything and other times can feel a little overwhelming, but you know, we move. So if this is your first time listening, this is a parenting podcast with a difference because it is all about children with SEND and it is all about talking to amazing women and mums of our special, gorgeous children and all of their extra needs. So it's an honest place because I do want the overall feeling of this podcast to be positive and hopeful, but also I don't want it to be unrealistic. So yes, sometimes it's shit, isn't it? But a lot of the times it's great. So that's what you can expect by listening to this episode and this podcast in general. And my guest this week is another person that I have Insta-stalked. And I love it when I slide into someone's DMs and they're like, yeah, I'd love to come on. It's great. It makes me feel fabulous. So this week's guest is Abby Bates. You might know her better as Happy Hands Harriet ASD on Instagram or TikTok. I've accepted that me and TikTok don't get on. So for me, just the Insta. Anyway, I really enjoyed this chat with Abby. I've wanted to get her on for a while to talk about her daughter, Harriet. So we talk about Harriet's different diagnoses and which ones Abby actually finds more difficult, the fact that she's trying to get one of them changed and why that's important. We talk about acceptance and also how she feels about the quite big Instagram following that she has built up and also why she started that and what it means to her. The other thing we talk about in this episode is how Harriet is dealing with her AAC device and how maybe it's not always the answer to your prayers that you think it's going to be. So it's a great episode. I hope you enjoy it. Let's get into it. Hi, Abby. Thanks so much for joining me.
Nice to join you too. Thank you for having us.
So before we start, I've made a small, what will probably turn out to be a mistake in the fact that I've let my dog, Dolly, join this podcast recording on my lap. So there she is. You can see her now. The likelihood is that she won't be a good girl and that she'll either bark or cry and I'll have to remove her. So I'm just starting off with that in case there's any weird noises. It is Dolly, the miniature sausage dog, being naughty as usual. So Abby, you are here to talk to me about your daughter, Harriet.
Yeah.
Is she three? She's about to be four or is she already four?
She's about to be four in August, yeah.
Okay, will you just tell me a little bit about her?
So she shows signs of autism spectrum disorder around about 6 months old, was when family kind of alerted me that they had concerns. I kind of pushed it out of the way. She was so young at the time. And she was progressing well at that age. Around about 14 months was kind of when I noticed that she had regressed and it was becoming more clear to me that she was on the spectrum. She is completely nonverbal still, and she's nearly 4 years of age. She was diagnosed with autism, global development delay, sensory processing disorder, and PICA at the age of 2 years old. And she's now in a special needs school.
Now, I've had guests on before the Send Mummies talking about PICA, but for anyone who hasn't heard that episode, can you just explain what PICA is, please?
Yeah, PICA is like an eating disorder where they eat non-edible foods, but it's when they fully swallow and digest it.
You mentioned there that it was actually your family that suspected something. What was it that kind of made them think that?
Harriet took a long time to start using eye contact. She wasn't using any as a baby. She wasn't like interacting, I would say, as a typical child would. She was never interested in the typical toys that babies and young children are interested in. She would rock back and forth. She was constantly like twisting her hands. She seemed to like be glued to one children's program and would never watch anything else. And she's still glued to that program.
What is it?
And Peppa Pig. She's Peppa Pig mad. But like she would sit there and like happily watch the same episodes 5,000 times and not be bothered by it at all. I did try to go to like baby groups and things when she was a lot younger, and I could just see, sat different with me compared to the other children around her age. They seemed like they were more interactive, more engaged compared to Harriet.
Like looking back, do you think that you did have no suspicions, or do you think that maybe you did think it and you were trying not to? Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, I felt like I don't have family that are diagnosed with autism. So it kind of came like a big shock when it was first mentioned to me. It was something that I just didn't ever think of. I think as it Harriet's my first and only child, I kind of wanted to, I was just like, no, she's fine. Like, I'm just happy, like, I'm a new mum. I'm excited about everything. I don't want to think of her having autism kind of thing. So I kind of just thought, put it to the back of my mind and just see how things plan out. Because at the time when it was all being mentioned, she was doing well. She was progressing well. And she was hitting the milestones on time. So I didn't really have any concerns.
And then once she was hitting those milestones, because obviously everybody's story and everybody's journey is different, and it doesn't really matter almost what the diagnosis is called, does it, in terms of how your child will be. Did she then regress? Because I have seen a lot of people saying that their child did start to speak and they had a few words and then all of a sudden those words disappeared. Was that the case with Harriet?
Yeah, so I think it was around 12, 13 months she started to say Dada. Mm-hmm. So we were all obviously really excited, and it sounded like she was trying to say Mama and Nana. And it was only like then, after hearing it a few times, it just stopped. And then it wasn't just the speech, it was then like being able to use a spoon, it was clapping, waving. She's never pointed. It felt like you just woke up the next day and it was all gone. So I know that some people feel like it slowly went over time, but for us it was like it was just all gone really quickly. So it was a huge shock at the time.
That must have been really hard, because it's different, I guess. I mean, with Leo, I think he is hitting his milestones, but they're just quite delayed compared to other children his age. There's that, or there's your child not hitting a milestone and you never seeing them do that. But I can't imagine how it feels to kind of see that and celebrate it and then kind of have it snatched away from you.
Yeah, I feel like that's what kept me like kind of going, and it kept pushing the thought of her being autistic behind, because I was like, now she's trying to say words, now she's trying to do this, and I'm so happy and I'm watching her do it. So I was like, they're completely wrong. Like she's getting there, she's starting to say words. And then like I was totally like, definitely like the first time mum, like, I don't want to listen to anyone. I know what's right. But I was thought, if I just keep going, I keep trying, she'll be fine. But I find it laughable now, and sometimes I want to like just shake the old version of me and go like, it's not going to be as bad as what you think it's going to be like, and don't be worried by it.
But I think I would challenge anyone to find somebody who actually feels like that. You know, when you're suspecting that your child might be neurodivergent, or you get a diagnosis, I don't think there's anybody who would just be like, okay, cool, everything's going to be fine, because you naturally go to the worst case. And it's It's also, I think, because everything is on such a spectrum, it's the fear of the unknown as well, isn't it? Is you just don't know what that is then going to look like.
Definitely. Yeah.
So I saw on your Instagram, you are trying to get Harriet's diagnosis, or one of her diagnoses is changed. Diagnoses? One of them changed.
Yeah.
From global development delay to a learning disability. Have I got that right?
Yeah.
Can you just explain, and this is to me as well, because like I've said on this podcast before, everything's a learning curve, isn't it? You're learning things as you go along, and I'm learning so much from speaking to other mums. What is the difference between global development delay and learning disability? And why is it important that that diagnosis changes for her?
So global development delay is usually when a child is delayed in most or a few of their developments. In Harriet's case, she's delayed in all development, and she is seen to be in 0 to 6 months age range of development, when she should be of a four-year-old, for example. They usually change the diagnosis when they get older or in what they've spoken to me about. Because Harriet started to send school earlier, she's had a year within school to progress, to hopefully get her to the age she's supposed to be in development-wise. I feel like you can progress after having global development delay diagnosis and actually get up to the age you're meant to be at in development. It needs to change because, so you can have the diagnosis and then later catch up. And in Harriet's case, that's unfortunately not happened. With a learning disability, it's more so as it's more long-term. And sometimes that can mean that, for example, if there's a seven-year-old, their development might be of a two-year-old. And then as they get to 10, they might become five-year-old in development. So they always seem to work a few years behind their actual age. And I feel like that's Harriet. She progresses, definitely. She has made progress since being at her son school. But it's she's learning the things that she probably should have learned years ago. So she's just learned to start to clap again since progressing. When you say global development delay, the people just think, oh, well, they're just delayed. And I feel like in Harriet's case, it impacts her so much. It's one of the hardest things for us is her global development delay, because it's all those extra care needs that she has and supporting her a lot more than maybe a child without global development delay would need, like feeding and everything like that, getting her dressed, washed, like day-to-day living.
So it almost like, so, you feel like in her case, it almost like trivialises it.
Definitely. I feel like it's kind of looking at like baby milestones. When she's now getting past that, she's in school and it's no longer just a delay. Is something that I feel like it's going to impact her for the rest of her life. Hopefully she will progress, but it's hard to see her get to the age she's meant to be at now, because it's been years. They hope that school would then get her to the level she needs to be at, but in her case, it hasn't. It's she's progressed and she's done really, really, really well, and her teachers are absolutely amazing. But she definitely needs that extra support.
Harriet is, how would you prefer that I said it? Nonverbal or pre-verbal? Because I know everyone has kind of different preferences, don't
everyone
they?
Everyone has a different, I say nonverbal.
And how has that been in terms of her learning to communicate with you, and obviously you being able to understand what she wants?
It's really, really, really difficult, and I feel like she gets a lot of frustration out because she can't communicate. From a few years to now, we've progressed. She does now hand lead me, not to everything, but specifically it'll be like food. She knows she'll take me to the kitchen, for example. She can't show, like, she can't open cupboards and doors and things like that yet. So it's just straight to the kitchen, and I have to guess what she wants to eat. And she'll hand guide me to the door to say she wants to go out. I don't know where, but I know she wants to go out. So it's still a guessing game. I think as time goes on, you just learn to pick up what your child's trying to tell you. To everybody else, it's just gibberish. They don't know. They're like, how did you know? That's what she wanted. But you pick up over time. But it's the hardest bit is more to see how frustrating it is for her.
Am I right in thinking that you've got an AAC device?
Yes.
Just for people that don't know, because I didn't know what this was before I started the podcast, if I'm honest. I'd never seen one before. So what exactly is that, and how does it work?
So the easiest way to describe it is a tablet or a device that someone who either is completely nonverbal or trying to learn to communicate in other ways can use a device, which is like PECS, which is like the cards where you have the symbol and what that symbol stands for. But it's on a device, you click the icon and then it speaks for you.
And how much difference has that made to you?
I would like to say it's made a massive difference, and Harriet uses it and it's helped me to communicate with her. But I feel like for some people, it's incredible, it's life-changing, and it really, really does help those struggling to communicate. I feel like, again, it's going back to learning disability. Sometimes it is a lot harder for those with learning disabilities to pick things up like that. Harriet does not understand PECS at all. I feel like it doesn't help the fact that Harriet hand flicks all the time. She hand flicks every single object. It doesn't matter what it is, she hand flicks it. So when it comes to cards, that's the easiest thing for her. So you show her a card, she just wants to hand flick it. She's not interested in what's on that piece of card. I continue to use the AAC device and model it by showing her the item and telling her the item and get like pointing on the AAC. But obviously, Harriet cannot use a tablet at all. If she wants to watch something, then I have to physically do it all for her. It's just one of those things that if I don't try, we'll never know. And I feel like I just have to keep going. And even if it doesn't go anywhere, at least I've tried to do it with her. The school will continue to use PECS, sign language and everything at school as well. Harriet hasn't picked up sign language, Makaton, anything like that. But again, we all still try and use it in hope that one day she will pick it up. There's been a few times she has pressed on the AAC device. Whether she fully understands what it means or not, I don't know. But to me, even just pressing on the AAC is huge for her, because she can't point, she can't use the tablets and things usually.
How do you cope? And I'm not trying to put words in your mouth at all, so tell me if I'm completely wrong. How do you feel when you get frustrated? Because that's a natural feeling, isn't it? If you're really, really trying with something, with anything. But I think as a parent, it's a natural feeling to feel that frustration when you're trying to teach your child something and it isn't going in. Like, do you have those moments? Or
I feel like I have got a lot of patience, which is good to have. So I do have a lot of patience, and I kind of sometimes, like, of course I get frustrated, it gets overwhelming. Some days you just want to pull your hair out, cry. But I just tell myself, like, she's trying, like, that's, like, Harriet is trying every single day, and all you can do is do your best as well. So I just try and remain calm. Whatever the future has to hold for us, like, I'm going to be by her side. I'm going to put my all into it. So it's sad to think of how hard it could get for Harriet in the future. But, like, All you can do is know that you're doing the best as a parent, and I'm not perfect. I don't think any parent is. We just try our best, and that's all we can really do. So,
with the communication, how is that with your family and friends, and, you know, people who aren't day to day with Harriet?
Close family, they know that Harriet will hand guide, and they feel like honoured. Like, if Harriet goes over to them and tries to take their hand, they're like, yes, I'm off, because they get that interaction with her, just because she's actually coming over to them and choosing them to take. Because Harriet usually isn't like that. She's a lot better around adults than she is with children, but she likes her space. She likes to do her own thing and not be bothered. The family do understand. I think it's taken a while to get to where we are, where family now understand. There was a few people it was hard to kind of digest, and they were learning about autism, and because Harriet's so young, they never thought that she would like be nonverbal. They just thought, you know, she'll pick it up, she'll be fine. Never thought of Harriet being in a special needs school, for example. But now, because she is nonverbal, she is in a sense school and things like that, they learn. And we are really lucky. Like, the family that are close, they are brilliant. So they're learning, we're learning.
It's funny, isn't it? I think when you first get that diagnosis, you might be different, but certainly for me, I didn't really, and it sounds quite selfish actually, but I didn't really consider how that diagnosis was going to impact our family. I was thinking about me and my husband and my older two children to an extent, but I think kids are quite accepting, aren't they? They don't see things in the same way as an adult would.
Yeah.
And I just didn't consider the impact on our, you know, our close family. But I guess it impacts everyone around that child, doesn't it?
Definitely, without a doubt. I was probably the same. I didn't really think. I was just like, I need this diagnosis to make sure that I can do whatever I can for Harriet and make sure that she's got the right support in place. And that's, to be honest, the one thing I was thinking about. I wasn't thinking about how family would react or what they would think about it all. I'm one of those straight, like, cut to the chase people. Like, if you don't stand by me, bye-bye, because that's my child at the end of the day, and you need to accept my child for who she is, just like I would. And there had been times where I've kind of had to put my foot down and educate family members because they don't quite understand certain things. Because Harriet's not just got autism, so there's other diagnoses, and then it's like learning about them because they're like, I don't know what they are and I've never heard of that one before. But they've been amazing, and sometimes you just have to teach them. And if they're a supportive family and a loving family, then they will want to learn as well. And that's what my family have done. They've wanted to learn. They wanted to know more and to help Harriet, so, and myself.
Yeah, that's really nice to hear. So I want to talk to you about Instagram, because I've been following you for a while and I love the content that you're posting. What made you decide to do that to start with?
So it was like a few months before Harriet was diagnosed, I started the account. And it was around the time that I had started to accept the fact that Harriet was definitely autistic. And I was just like on the ball, like, I need to find out everything I need to know to help her. But I felt completely lost. I remember the day, like, they said to me, look, like, we're referring Harriet. We believe she's autistic. And I was at work because Harriet went to the nursery I worked at. And I was like, I need to take a minute. And I went outside the nursery and I was with my manager and I just cried my eyes out. Absolutely cried my hands out, and I was just thinking, like, the worst possible outcome. I was like, what's her life going to be like, kind of thing. And I just didn't know what to do. So I booked an appointment to go see the doctor. And I was like, so my child has been referred for an autism assessment. And I was like wondering, like, what happens? What's the process? Like, how can I support my daughter? And I think that was the biggest wake up ever, was the doctor, within 60 seconds of sitting down, just looked at Harry and went, well, she looked at me. She's not autistic. She just looked at me. And I was just like, what?
That's crazy.
I was like, are you okay? Like, I haven't even explained, like, her traits, what, like, more in detail about the health as to the reason for putting in the referral or anything. He just literally put his face right next to Harriet's and just went, well, she looked at me. And I was just like, is this it? Is this what's going to happen? Like, nobody's going to listen. Like, where do I go from here? I just came out bawling my eyes out and I just didn't know what to do. I went on to Instagram and I was like, looking at other people's accounts and things like that. And I was just like, why don't I make an account and talk about our process of getting a diagnosis and what happens along the way, and hope that I get to speak to other parents that are going through similar journeys as us. And that's what I did. Never did I think we would get the amount of views, the amount of follows that we've had. That never even crossed my mind. The same with, like, the hate that comes with it. Like, I didn't even know about the extent of the hate. I didn't know all these conspiracy theories that people were making up about autism. Like, I was completely blind to it all. And I feel like a lot of people are so uneducated or have these stereotypes of autism because they haven't been in that path. Like, their child's not diagnosed. They don't know someone who's diagnosed. So they just believe all these stereotypes of what autism looks like and is like, which was a huge shock. But then it came with all this, like, amazing feeling that I didn't feel alone anymore. And I could speak to people who were going through the similar situations as us. And then as time went on, people were messaging me saying, like, thank you, like, you've helped me, like, I love watching your videos. It's like, I've managed to do this, I've managed to do that. And I was just like, what? Like, I've helped someone. Like, that's, like, incredible. Like, I'm so happy for you. Like, I'm so happy, like, you've managed to listen to one of our videos and it's helped you get something or get somewhere quicker. And I think it just gave me more and more determination to just do more and try and help other people.
I think that's the really lovely thing that I found about the Send community is you kind of pass it on. So there's always somebody further ahead of you that has helped you, or numerous people that are further ahead that have helped you. And then it comes to a point where you're then helping people who are further behind you. And it does feel nice, doesn't it? Because it's almost like you've created what you were looking for, haven't you, when you got that diagnosis?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, no, it's amazing. And I think it's such a strong community. Like, everybody, like, a lot of people are there to support each other and help each other the best way they can. And that's just incredible.
It's quite a big thing, or it certainly was for me, to reach out to somebody that you don't know, to go, oh, hi, you don't know me, but here's kind of where my mental health's at. Can you help me, please? Because, you know, that is the reality, isn't it? That people are probably reaching out, as we have all done, because they need some kind of help. Who do you talk to? Is it people on socials, or is it friends, or is it your family? Like, who would be your go-to people if you're feeling overwhelmed and you're struggling?
My go-to person, she's a friend. It's kind of like a really strange story, but we went to primary school together. I ended up going to a different school, moving out of the local area at the time. We rekindled as adults, and her son is autistic, nonverbal, PICA, global development delay, same as Harriet. And she does have an Instagram account, at LJ's World. which is come off, unfortunately. I think, again, it's sometimes it can be overwhelming doing so much, but she's definitely someone who is like my counsellor to get me through everything. Like, we can, like, well, I'll go to hers or she'll come here and we vent. We vent about everything we need to vent about. I think we just live in very similar worlds. Her son's in a same school, he's nonverbal. He's a little bit older than Harriet, but it's very, very similar. And I think when we first started to talk again, it was like, wow, there's actually a child that's similar to mine in my area. It was like when I first started Instagram, I was like, there's loads of children that are like nonverbal, got global development delay, like all these same diagnoses as Harriet. But then when I was trying to find someone in my local town, it felt like there was no one. Or like they were kind of different scales of the spectrum. So when we first started to talk to each other, we kind of were like, no, like they can't be, like they can't be similar, they can't have the same diagnosis. And then it was when we met up, we were like, wow, like our children are very much the same, like different ages, different genders, but they're very alike. Like, she's amazing, like, to speak to about anything. And obviously, like, I think my life is so solely on being a carer, parent carer, and autism. Like, that is my life. So I don't usually have other conversations. It's always about our children. It's always about appointments or what's happening with schools and things like that. And I think if there's anybody else, I'd bore them to death. When she's like, oh yeah, I get it, like this is happening, that's happening. So it's nice to have some people you can relate to. Like, obviously Instagram, speak to so many people. And what's really nice is I love the fact that when I first started the account, those families that I did speak to, a lot of them have progressed like amazing, or they've started speaking, and it's absolutely incredible. And I know how much that must mean to them. And it's literally like watching my own child. I'm like, yeah. And you just get so happy about it. You get so, like, because you've been watching them for years. Like, they're one of the first few people to, like, speak to you about everything. You're a couple years down the line and they've come on massively. So, yeah, I absolutely love it.
How do you cope with the comparison like that? Because I think that's a kind of a common theme for everyone in this situation, is looking at, like you've just said, like looking at other children who are doing something that your child isn't. It's hard, isn't it?
It really takes a toll. And there's been some times where I'm just like, I don't want to open Instagram because I'm going to watch something that's going to kind of hurt me. But I try to remember that they were in my shoes. They were hoping for their child to learn to do that or to say a word. So I just try and remain, like, happy and excited for them, like I would if it was Harriet. And I understand, like, they want to celebrate their child's progress, and I would do the same. So I think it's amazing, and I think they should do it. Why shouldn't they? They're proud parents, and anybody else would be jumping off the roof if their child just learned to say a word or do something. So, yeah, it hurts, it's hard, but I just try and stay positive and think about their family and how excited they must be. So.
Yeah, and I guess it's important to remember, isn't it, that you can be happy for somebody else and sad for yourself at the same time.
Yeah. At home, I'm very much like that. I try and show that on my page. Like, I'm not always happy, bubbly, positive. I have days like anybody else where it is such a struggle, and I want to cry. I want to grieve about what I thought our lives were going to be like. Because that's the truth. I don't want to try and say it's a rainbow all the time. Everything's easy at home, and I don't get upset when I see other children progressing really well and my child's still struggling. Like, it hurts, and that's the reality of it. And I think we should show that some children really do need a lot of care and they need a lot of support, and that's okay. I feel like there's a lot of stereotypes of what autism is supposed to be like, especially with TV programs and things like that. We've got, they're autistic, they must be intelligent. They must be really smart with numbers. And sometimes it's not always like that. And sometimes children need a lot of support. They become adults, they need a lot of support. They need to learn how to do daily living tasks. And they need that support. And I think you should show that it's a spectrum and show that, okay, sometimes it is really difficult and we're struggling to make it through the day. And there's other days where it's absolutely incredible and it's gone really well. We haven't had a meltdown. So I think it's good to show the truth behind it all.
I agree. We always finish the podcast with the same two questions. The first one being, what is the best piece of advice that you've been given on your journey with Harriet so far?
Probably breathe and take a minute for yourself, because I'm the worst for it. I'm my biggest critic and I'm so determined on doing things and I focus solely on Harriet and helping others, I kind of forget to actually take any care of myself. And I have family all the time, just breathe for a minute, just take a moment, try and just have 5-10 minutes, and we'll just watch Harriet for a minute, just breathe, because you're just constant. And I'm like, I know, but I've got to do this and I've got to do that. And it is just so easy. Obviously, we all love to have these magical babysitters that come and know how to take care of our children so we can have 5 minutes. But I don't have a magical babysitter. And even though I'm 24/7 with Harriet, I should still take time to take care of myself, because some days I just want to get up. And when I throw a pair of joggers on and do nothing, I used to bother with going to the gym. I can't, that's hard to do as a carer, unless they're in full-time school or something like that. So it's hard to take care of your own health when you're so focused on trying to meet your child's needs. So piece of advice, think of yourself and take a moment for yourself, as well as advocating for your children 24/7.
Good advice. What do you wish you'd known when you first got Harriet's diagnosis?
I wish the day she was diagnosed that they said to me, this is a piece of paper, she's been diagnosed, but now you're about to hit a massive wave and you're going to have to learn about everything and be prepared for it. Especially things like EHCPs, things like that. They don't mention these things, do you? I know for myself, I was like, wait, Harriet can't, I know Harriet can't go to mainstream, so what do I need to do? And it was research and everything and trying to know all of this information online. They don't sit there and tell you, this is what you need to do, this is how it works. I did the Harriet's EHCP on my own. I didn't get any help via nurseries or anything, because I had taken her out to do the EHCP myself. Because I knew it wasn't right in the nursery. Nobody tells you. It's just good luck, here's your diagnosis. And at the time you think, oh, such a relief, she's finally got her diagnosis now. But you have no idea what's coming up and what's ahead of you and what you need to know. It's a very important thing, a diagnosis, to get the right support. But it is just a piece of paper. There's so much more to it. The same with DLA, things like that. Nobody tells you. I remember thinking, oh, well, Harriet's not going to get that, because, she's just autistic. And I didn't see the things I was doing for her as actual care needs. That's my daughter. I'd do anything for her kind of thing. So now I could tell you everything about it. but there definitely should be something that when you go for your diagnosis, they speak to you about DLA, EHCPs, everything that you need to know, respite, the lot. Because otherwise, a lot of families don't know what they are or how to apply. The same with like disability pushchairs and things like that. People don't know actually there is a wheelchair service, you can get referred to it and you can be supported in that. Or there is charities to help you. Nobody knows this unless they go hunting for it. So I definitely think they need to do more when they diagnose children to explain the actual how it works, the system, and how they can best support their children. So
yeah, definitely. So Abby, just before you go, where can people find you on social media if they aren't already following?
So we're on Instagram at happyhandsharrier_ASD, the same on TikTok and Facebook.
Thank you so much. I've really enjoyed chatting to you. Dolly the dog, wildly, has been a very good, quiet girl. So that's a miracle in itself. Abby, I really appreciate you coming on the pod. Thank you.
Amazing. Thank you.
I really enjoyed that chat with Abby. I hope you enjoyed listening. I also really enjoyed the fact that my dog was a good girl, which is very unlike her. But yeah, I thought there were some really, really interesting things in that chat about acceptance at the beginning of a diagnosis and about, you know, family dealing with a diagnosis of your child and how that makes you feel and them feel. This is another one of those episodes where I've learned something. I didn't know what the difference between global development delay and learning disability is. So once again, my guest is educating me, which I love. And that's also something that I hope you are learning things from various different guests, because that helps us all, doesn't it? It helps the entire community, because knowledge is power. It's all awareness, and that helps with acceptance. So yeah. If you're not already following Abby, definitely do. I love the stuff that she's posting. If you enjoyed this episode, please subscribe, rate, review, follow, whatever it is. Leave 5 stars. That'd be amazing. And if this is your first time listening, please go back and listen to the other episodes, because I have had some amazing women on this podcast as well as Abby. So that's it from me for another week. Thank you again for listening, and I'll be back with another fabulous guest next week.